This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan's away. More women are enlisting in the military today than ever before. Women now comprise nearly 15% of all active duty personnel in the military, and more of them are serving in combat zones in Iraq and Afghanistan. As truck drivers, medics, pilots, or police officers, women in war zones face challenges few other women have ever experienced. And some of the problems they face when they return home are unique. They're more likely to suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. Many are coping with job instability and, in some cases, homelessness. All this raises questions about the adequacy of services available to female veterans. Today, we'll hear from one veteran about the difficulties she faced in trying to assimilate back into civilian life. And we want to hear from you, particularly the female veterans in our audience. What was your experience like? What issues did you have to deal with? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address, talk@npr.org. And you can also comment on our blog. It's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the hour, a new documentary looks at the early days and decisions of the war in Iraq, and we'll talk with the director. But first, female veterans. And we begin with Antoinette Scott. She's a veteran who served in Iraq, and she's also a mother of four. She was the first woman in the District of Columbia to receive the Purple Heart. She joins us here in Studio 3A. Good to have you with us, Antoinette.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
How long did you serve in Iraq?
I served for 7 months.
Tell us about what you did to win that Purple Heart. Can you tell us that story?
Well, I was a truck driver. To put it in layman's terms, I drove 5-ton vehicles daily while in Iraq. And on this particular day in November, a little bit before Thanksgiving, I was on a mission to drive my 5-ton with troops on the back of the truck. Our vehicles are equipped to do that. And on this day, maybe 5 minutes or 5 miles into the mission to drive the troops to the airport in Baghdad, we were attacked by a roadside bomb or an IED.
And were you injured?
Yes. I was injured upon impact. And from the direct impact of the explosion, I was injured in my face, my eyes, and few other small injuries, but for the most part, it was a head and facial injury.
And I understand you kept going despite your injuries.
Well, I didn't realize at that point that I was injured. It took a few minutes for me to gather myself and realize that the explosion had hit me.
Was that the toughest moment you had in Iraq?
Pretty much, yes.
Did you leave shortly after that?
Immediately. Yes.
Yeah. So when you got home, what were some of the issues you had to face when you got home? First, I gather, getting over the injury, I would assume.
Yes, healing. I did not come home looking the way that I left, so it was a pretty horrific experience. My mouth was wired, my face, my head was swollen. I had to resort back to the military eyeglasses, which were an eyesore to begin with, and just was not recognizable to my children, especially my baby.
And as we mentioned, you have four children.
Yes.
So getting used to being home again with four children, where you were injured and all of a sudden you were in a war zone, now back at home in your house with four children, were you able to cope with that?
I think I was totally detached for the first couple of weeks, maybe the first couple of months. I didn't take on the responsibilities that I had prior to leaving. I didn't pay the bills. I didn't do the cooking. I didn't do the cleaning. Didn't send the children to school. Pretty much was self-preserved and just focused on me.
So what was your family's reaction to that? What was your husband's reaction to that?
My husband encouraged me to get back into doing the things that I did before I left, but I felt like he did it while I was gone. He didn't really need me to jump back in and do it once I got home. So it took me some time to get back into my normal daily habits.
Were you suffering at this point from flashbacks, as people describe them?
Yes.
And do you still?
Yes.
Well, when did you realize you needed help, and what did you do about that?
I would say when I was in Germany, I was in Lunstow, Germany, before I came home to Walter Reed, and I constantly replayed the incident over and over and over again, and it felt like I had no control over stopping the replay of what happened in the if I could have, would have, had things, would things have gone differently. Unfortunately, no one else received injuries to the extent that I did. Very tiny little shrapnel injuries, but for the most part, I received the worst injuries. And for a driver, that's a pretty good feeling, because you don't want the responsibility of worrying about if you had made the wrong turn, if you didn't drive fast enough or slow enough, and someone else had gotten injured, that
would
guilt,
have made it much worse.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so because of that, I...
Once you did go for help, was the help there? Were the services available for you, and especially services geared toward a woman who had served in combat?
The services are available, but you don't realize that you need the services. Your own coping mechanism kicks in, especially for women. We're mothers, we're parents, we're usually the take-charge person in the household, and we're always trying to do it ourselves. And so it took me some time to realize that I needed professional help.
Yeah. It's interesting, I read that women vets tend not to even go after the services. They don't even think of themselves as veterans who deserve those services.
Absolutely. And if I could, I would just like to encourage any woman who has served in the military to this date, if you don't realize you're a veteran, trust me, you probably are.
How could they not realize they're a veteran?
I guess if you don't lose a limb, if you don't lose some kind of functioning capability, if you can still walk and you can still talk and you feel like you're not in a severe crisis, then you probably assume that you're not a veteran, and that's not true.
Interesting. Let's bring in another guest now. Joining us is Marsha Four. She served as an Army nurse in Vietnam and was chair of the VA Advisory Committee on Women's Veterans from 2001 to 2006. She's currently the program director of the Homeless Veterans Services for the Philadelphia Veterans Multi-Service and Education Center. And she joins us by phone from Coatesville, Pennsylvania. Thanks for being with us, Marsha.
Thank you very much.
I just want to ask you about what we were just discussing here with Antoinette, and that is this idea that a lot of women veterans don't even go for the help that may exist.
That's exactly correct, and I think, you know, that was touched on in your previous conversation here about women not even recognizing the fact that they're veterans. That's kind of been an underlying issue for a very, very long time. We're hoping that over time, especially since World War II, Vietnam, over time, more women are recognizing this, because it's more out in our general cultural awareness. But I think the dilemma that faces many is the way the question is posed to them when they are not sure, because oftentimes, as was said, that to be a veteran in the minds of some means I carried a weapon, I was in a war, I lost a limb, I have disabilities, where in fact the question we're trying to put forward is, did you serve in the military? Did you wear the uniform of this country? You know, oftentimes there's where you get down to the bottom line answer, and then more information can be obtained. So that's sort of the dilemma we're facing with women veterans, and actually some male veterans who didn't go to wartime and wonder if their service makes them eligible to be a veteran.
If you wore the uniform, you're eligible.
If you wore the uniform and did you serve in the military, I mean, that's a big one, did you serve in the military,
okay,
that at least opens the door, because you know there's something else you've got to ask.
Marsha, do women require unique services that are different from men, and if so, why?
Well, they do. They do, just as men have some unique services that they require. You know, we can always go to the gender-specific differences between the men and the women and the health care issues that each has that's unique to them. But today we're talking about the women. And, you know, another thing that Antoinette mentioned very clearly was coping, you know, and coming home. I mean, there's a lot of issues that anyone faces who's gone to war. No one, if you have not been in war, you cannot know war. You know, if you've been there, war has a smell and it has a feeling and it's crawling on your body. And if you haven't been in those situations, it's very difficult to know what's inside the heads of those who have. And so when we look at the women, you know, they're now very unique because their numbers are much larger than they ever have been in the past. After Vietnam, only 2% could be in the military. Now it's opened up. And anywhere from 15 to 18% of the women, depending if it's active duty, guard, and reserve, are in the military. Today, 20% of all the new recruits are women. And so the numbers are growing and growing. But with that comes also some of the issues that women have always had. They have always been the caregivers in a family situation. You know, we have many who have left children, and sometimes very young children, who have to be cared for by other family members while they're gone.
And it's hard to take that role back on, you're saying.
It's hard to take it on. Sometimes no one wants to give it up.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes the children have attached themselves so much
to somebody else, and that must be very hard.
It's a very emotional issue to have to face.
Did you go through that, Antoinette? Let me just ask Antoinette.
Absolutely. My mom and my sister were there with my husband, and they were the go-to people for my children. So I was bypassed for a short time when I came home initially.
So that was really tough.
Yes.
And you hear those stories a lot, Marcia.
Yes, I do. You know, someone else has taken your place. But, you know, you say in your head, I can do this. I did do this. This has been my role. I know what I'm doing here. I've always been able to measure up. I've always taken care of what has been mine, and I'm going to do this.
Okay, Marcia.
And oftentimes it's at the expense of what we need to do for ourselves.
We're going to take a short break, Marcia. We're going to continue this discussion when we come back. If you'd like to join us, give us a call at 800-989-TALK. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. As the number of women in the military grows, so does the need for veteran services targeted to female vets. And we've been hearing those services aren't always keeping up with demand. Our focus today is on the challenges facing women's vets and women vets and the services available to them. Still with us is Antoinette Scott. She served in Iraq and earned a Purple Heart. Also, Marcia Ford. She served in the Army Nurse Corps during Vietnam and is currently the Director of Homeless Veterans Services for the Philadelphia Veterans Multi-Service and Education Center. We also want to hear from female veterans who are listening today. Tell us what your post-service experience was like. What issues did you have to deal with? Give us a call, 800-989-TALK, or send an email to talk@npr.org. And we're going to take a call now from Jennifer. She's calling from Rochester, New York. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi. I served in the Army from 1988 to 91. And it was during Desert Storm, but I didn't serve overseas at all. I was here stateside the whole time. My biggest issue when I was in was that I didn't understand male culture and how men work together and sort of, I don't know, the signals that they use. And there's a whole different set of rules when men deal with each other. And because the military is so male-dominated, and really was at that time, and men were really resistant in a lot of cases to women even being present, my biggest issue was just trying to navigate that and keep myself as a feminine person and yet be respected and seen as a valuable member of a team in a military sense.
And did that cause problems also after you got out of the military and in terms of any issues you had as a vet?
Well, I've been really fortunate. I haven't had a lot, although my dad bought me an American Legion membership when I got out of the Army. And the first time I went into a Legion in a small Minnesota town to have a drink, I was asked to present my card because none of the men who were in there could really believe that I was actually a veteran.
And did they accept you eventually, or?
You know, I think really for a lot of the, you know, the World War II era vets particularly, they just didn't, most of them have looked at me when I've met them as something of an anomaly, and that it really was, you know, sort of impertinent for me to even think of joining such an organization, such an old boys club. I think the Vietnam veterans that I've encountered, partly because my dad is one, I think that they've been a little more welcoming and a little more accepting. Mm-hmm. And anybody who served in the same era as I did in the first Gulf War, you know, those guys don't really think twice about it because we were a small number, but there were definitely women all over. So it really is a generational thing.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your call. And I want to raise some of the questions that you've brought up with our guest. Marsha, for the issues that Jennifer raised about sexism in the military, this can affect women after they get out of the military as well, can't it?
Well, certainly based on what experience that they had when they were active duty, it certainly can carry with them once they transfer back into civilian life, absolutely.
Well, one thing I want to ask about is I've read that women might have more possibility of getting post-traumatic stress syndrome, possibly because they may have had a traumatic experience before they even entered the military, and it may be a traumatic experience involving sexual abuse. Is that the case?
That certainly is. It is certainly some of the cases that we have seen. And there's been some information gathered on that. The VA does a lot of studies, of course, on these types of problems. One of the things that was recognized, actually, even in talking to some individuals I know at DOD, Department of Defense, but also with the VA, recognizing that in some circumstances, women who have found themselves in a situation that they need to change their lives, they don't have a good support system, and they need to escape sometimes the situations they are in, will turn to the military and join the military in order to find a better life and to get advantage to what the military has to offer. And so they do come sometimes with some mental health issues as they enter into the military. We've seen this on the backside. It has translated itself on the backside in some occasions with their inability to reintegrate into a system that never existed for them before the military, and that is a family support system that can help navigate them through the crises they may be having, or especially those women who are coming back from the current crisis in Iraq and Afghanistan, that there's no one there to help them through this this very distressful time. And so, in fact, it does play a great part in their ability to cope and find the resources to help them after they get out of the military.
Is the military beginning to understand that they need to set up services that are specifically geared towards women vets?
Well, they certainly have to, and I certainly can't speak about DOD. That's not my forte, but they certainly have addressed it in a much stronger fashion in the last few years. You know, in the early 90s, actually, there were a lot of hearings that were placed out there, congressional hearings on military sexual trauma and what was happening inside the military at that time. And there have been continual concerns about that and addresses of that. You had the Air Force Academy problems, and, you know, that none of these things are unknown to people. But military sexual trauma is a very big issue, and Department of Defense has put forward, and actually with the help of Congress, that they have worked together to initiate some new programs that will allow a certain amount of anonymity inside the military if you have to report a rape, we'll say, for instance, or some kind of a sexual trauma. So that they've made the reporting system inside the Department of Defense easier for those who need to navigate and get help, but not necessarily try to bring a person up on charges and have the whole world know about it. So, and they're having some oversight on those things, and they're hoping that that process will bring more of the men and the women, actually, because there are a lot of men who have problems with military sexual trauma, too, that they will come forward and get the help that they need while they're still on active duty.
All right. We're talking about the problems that a lot of women veterans face. If you want to join our discussion, give us a call at 989-8255. And Antoinette, before you have to leave, just if you were to give one piece of advice to a woman out there who is a veteran, who's coping with some unexpected problems, perhaps things she didn't anticipate she was going to have, what would you tell her?
Go to the nearest VA center. They have evolved since we have gotten into the war in Iraq. They have come a very long way in being able to facilitate the needs of the soldiers and especially the needs of the women veterans. So just go to your nearest vet center and be evaluated. Don't second guess.
Okay. Thanks so much for being with us today, Antoinette.
Thank you for having me.
Antoinette Scott is a veteran who served in Iraq, and she was the first woman to receive a Purple Heart in Washington, D.C. And joining us now is Cheryl Beversdorf. She is the president and CEO of the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. She joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
I was surprised to hear how many women veterans are facing homelessness.
Well, it's true, and you know, as Marcia mentioned a little bit earlier, at one time the number was smaller because there were fewer women actually serving in the military. But the numbers are growing. The official number that we usually say is that first of all, there's about 200,000 homeless veterans on the street on any given night, 400,000 throughout a given year, and about 4 to 5% of that number, which is about 8,000, are women veterans. But for sure, those numbers, because of the increased number in the military, those numbers are going to be growing. And in fact, unofficially, the VA often says that of those who are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, that number now is about 12%.
Well, let's take a call now. We're going to go to Jean, and she is in South Florida. Jean, hi. Hi, Jean. Are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Jean. Go ahead.
I'm just trying to – I can barely hear. What I want to say was when I was in the service in the 80s, was new when the women were put with the men. And to be real concise, what happened to me, I didn't go to combat, but what happened to me was I was raped in the military. I was date raped, to be specific, and which I wasn't used to that behavior. Then a man tried to rape me in my barracks, and I obviously he wasn't completely successful. But the people on top of that, I was sexually harassed. I got verbally abused. We don't want women here, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They did everything in their power to... Then there was a lesbian woman who was my first sergeant. She was very abusive as well. And I was in shock because I thought that, gee, you know, we're all part of the same team. I don't understand this. I was naive. So I got out of service. My divorce fell apart. I mean, I got divorced because my husband was devastated by how I was abused. I ended up in a disciplinary barracks, which is now closed. They abused me. I was the only woman there. I was abused there. I could write a book about that. My case is probably, I went to federal court in, a Vietnam vet lawyer actually approached me back years ago and, we went to court for whatever reason. I don't even know why I was out of it at that time.
Did you ever face the problem of homelessness, Jean?
Yes, I did.
What happened?
After the service, I got divorced. I went to work, I finished my degree. 10 years later, after 10 years of suffering and, I was ill for 10 years. And I finally came to the end of the road, and I was in the VA clinic getting some pill that they would give me for free. And a Vietnam vet approached me. He saw something was wrong with me, and he is the one who saved me because he explained to me there was something wrong. He's very nice about it. And he got my military records, and I basically was psychotic. I was running around with expensive clothes on in corporate America, being abused by everyone. I had no defenses after I left the service, and I was abused. And what shocked me that was heartbreaking, which I'm over it at this point.
Jean, let me ask our guests to respond to your situation because you've raised so many issues that you faced. And I'd like to hear from our guests, particularly from Cheryl Beversdorf, who deals with issues like this and people who might eventually face homelessness as a result of some of the things they experienced in the military. I wonder if you can respond to some of the points that have been raised, Cheryl.
Well, I think what Jean is saying is absolutely right. There are oftentimes so many people say, well, why are veterans homeless? What is the unique situations that lend themselves to veterans being homeless? And so, first of all, both with Marsha and Antoinette, you've actually covered some of the issues pertaining to the health issues, you know, the mental and the physical that Antoinette talked about, the PTSD. I mean, this is really an incredible issue. Depression. Another one that actually comes up quite a bit is substance abuse, because that is, again, related to the possibility of PTSD, drinking too much, taking the drugs, this sort of thing. The second aspect actually deals with employment. Many people, particularly those who are coming back now from Iraq and Afghanistan, went into the service when they were young. They just graduated from high school. They didn't get any kind of skill development or any kind of college education. And frankly, when they were in the military, they didn't necessarily acquire any skills that would be transferable once they got out. I would also say that those who are in the National Guard and the Reserves are having problems with respect to employment because they're coming back, and because of multiple deployments, they're not getting their job back. So when one says, well, why are you homeless? Well, if you don't have a job, you're going to be likely to be homeless. And then another thing actually pertains to the housing issue. Jean didn't mention that, but housing, particularly nowadays in many areas of the country, finding affordable housing is very difficult. And then I think a fourth thing with Antoinette kind of alluded to, and perhaps Jean may have some merit as well, is acquiring benefits from the VA.
And that can be difficult.
It can. It can take a long time.
All right. We are talking about the special problems facing female veterans. The number is 800-989-TALK. And I want to thank you, Jean, for calling and raising those issues, which provided a great deal of thought for this discussion. And I want to remind our listeners that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. For female vets, Cheryl, are there shelters specifically set up for women who have served in the military?
Well, thank you for asking that question, because that's really what the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans represents. And in fact, Marsha Four is a part of one of the homeless veteran service providers that is a member of the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. Actually, around the country, there are over 280 of these community-based organizations that provide a myriad of services, anything from the basics of food and shelter and clothing, but also things like legal services, health services, counseling, other kinds of assessment. Plus, the other thing is so-called transitional housing, which goes up to 2 years. And the importance of these community-based organizations is to provide a way for men and women to get these services and, frankly, then get the help they need to transition back into productive lives as a civilian. So the community-based organizations are actually located on our website, www.nchv.org. And I would also say that we have a really excellent website as well as a 1-800 number, which people can call in.
Let's see if we get one more quick call in here. Let's go to Elliot in Michigan, if you can. Hi, Elliot.
Hi, good afternoon. My comments are a little bit more legacy. My mother in World War II was part of something called the Nurse Cadet Corps, which was a uniformed group of women who were recruited by the U.S. government to fill registered nurse and nurse positions that were taken up during the war and folks moved overseas. She completed her service, and all of the women in the Nurse Cadet Corps were denied veterans benefits. So for some 40, 50, 60 years, they had been fighting and struggling to be recognized as part of the U.S. military or part of the uniform military, and basically were denied that recognition.
All right, thanks for that. Thanks for that comment, Elliot. I want our guests to respond before the this part of the show ends. Perhaps Marsha Ford, quickly, can you respond to that? Is it possible for women from World War II to get benefits?
Well, I think he was talking about women who weren't on active duty at the time, if I'm understanding. They were women that went into positions here in the States to cover those positions that were vacated by...
And are there, just quickly, because we only have a few seconds left...
Actually, it's a Department of Defense issue.
Okay.
They're the ones that make those clarifications on who served in the active duty and then became veterans.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us, Marcia. Marcia Foer is the former chair of the VA Advisory Committee on Women's Veterans. We were also joined by Cheryl Beversdorf, president and CEO of the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary.